I. How Candide was brought up in a magnificent castle, and how he was expelled thence. In a castle of Westphalia, belonging to the Baron of Thunder ten Tronc, lived a youth, whom nature had endowed with the most gentle manners. His countenance was a true picture of his soul. He combined a true judgment with simplicity of spirit, which was the reason, I apprehend, of his being called Candide. The old servants of the family suspected him to have been the son of the Baron's sister, by a good, honest gentleman of the neighborhood, whom the young lady would never marry because he had been able to prove only 71 quarterings, the rest of his genealogical tree having been lost through the injuries of time. The Baron was one of the most powerful lords in Westphalia, for his castle had not only a gate, but windows. His great hall, even, was hung with tapestry. All the dogs of his farmyards formed a pack of hounds at need, his grooms were his huntsmen, and the curate of the village was his grand almoner. They called him my lord, and laughed at all his stories. The Baron's lady weighed about 350 pounds, and was therefore a person of great consideration, and she did the honors of the house with a dignity that commanded still greater respect. Her daughter Cunegonde was 17 years of age, fresh-colored, comely, plump, and desirable. The Baron's son seemed to be in every respect worthy of his father. The preceptor Pangloss I, was the oracle of the family, and little Candide heard his lessons with all the good faith of his age and character. Pangloss was professor of metaphysico-theologico-cosmolo-nigology. He proved admirably that there is no effect without a cause, and that, in this best of all possible worlds, the Baron's castle was the most magnificent of castles, and his lady the best of all possible baronesses. It is demonstrable, said he, that things cannot be otherwise than as they are, for all being created for an end, all is necessarily for the best end. Observe, that the nose has been formed to bear spectacles, thus we have spectacles. Legs are visibly designed for stockings and we have stockings. Stones were made to be hewn, and to construct castles, therefore my lord has a magnificent castle, for the greatest baron in the province ought to be the best lodged. Pigs were made to be eaten, therefore we eat pork all the year round. Consequently they who assert that all is well have said a foolish thing, they should have said all is for the best. Candide listened attentively and believed innocently, for he thought Miss Cunegonde extremely beautiful, though he never had the courage to tell her so. He concluded that after the happiness of being born a Baron of Thunder ten Tronc, the second degree of happiness was to be Miss Cunegonde, the third that of seeing her every day, and the fourth that of hearing Master Pangloss, the greatest philosopher of the whole province, and consequently of the whole world. One day Cunegonde, while walking near the castle, in a little wood which they called a park, saw between the bushes, Dr. Pangloss giving a lesson in experimental natural philosophy to her mother's chambermaid, a little brown wench, very pretty and very docile. As Miss Cunegonde had a great disposition for the sciences, she breathlessly observed the repeated experiments of which she was a witness, she clearly perceived the force of the doctor's reasons, the effects, and the causes, she turned back greatly flurried, quite pensive, and filled with the desire to be learned, dreaming that she might well be a sufficient reason for young Candide, and he for her. She met Candide on reaching the castle and blushed, Candide blushed also, she wished him good morrow in a faltering tone, and Candide spoke to her without knowing what he said. The next day after dinner, as they went from table, Cunegonde and Candide found themselves behind a screen, Cunegonde let fall her handkerchief, Candide picked it up, she took him innocently by the hand, the youth as innocently kissed the young lady's hand with particular vivacity, sensibility, and grace, their lips met, their eyes sparkled, their knees trembled, their hands strayed. Baron Thunder ten Tronc passed near the screen and beholding this cause and effect chased Candide from the castle with great kicks on the backside, Cunegonde fainted away, she was boxed on the ears by the Baroness, as soon as she came to herself, and all was consternation in this most magnificent and most agreeable of all possible castles, too. What became of Candide among the Bulgarians? Candide, driven from terrestrial paradise, walked along while without knowing where, weeping, raising his eyes to heaven, turning them often towards the most magnificent of castles which imprison the purest of noble young ladies. He lay down to sleep without supper, in the middle of a field between two furrows. The snow fell in large flakes. Next day Candide, all benumbed, dragged himself towards the neighbouring town which was called Walburg auf Drarb Dukdorf, having no money, dying of hunger and fatigue, he stopped sorrowfully at the door of an inn. Two men dressed in blue observed him. Comrade, said one, here is a well-built young fellow, and of proper height. They went up to Candide and very civilly invited him to dinner. Gentlemen, replied Candide, with a most engaging modesty, you do me great honor, but I have not wherewithal to pay my share. Oh, sir, said one of the blues to him, People of your appearance and of your merit never pay anything. Are you not 5 feet 5 inches high?
Yes, sir, that is my height, answered he, making a low bow.
Come, sir, seat yourself. Not only will we pay your reckoning, but we will never suffer such a man as you to want money. Men are only born to assist one another.
You are right, said Candide. This is what I was always taught by Mr. Pangloss, and I see plainly that all is for the best.
They begged of him to accept a few crowns. He took them, and wished to give them his note. They refused. They seated themselves at table.
Love you not deeply?
Oh yes, answered he, I deeply love Miss Cunegonde.
No, said one of the gentlemen, we ask you if you do not deeply love the King of the Bulgarians?
Not at all, said he, for I have never seen him.
What?
He is the best of kings, and we must drink his health.
Oh! Very willingly, gentlemen, and he drank.
That is enough, they tell him. Now you are the help, the support, the defender, the hero of the Bulgarians. Your fortune is made, and your glory is assured.
Instantly they fettered him, and carried him away to the regiment. There he was made to wheel about to the right, and to the left, to draw his rammer, to return his rammer, to present, to fire, to march, and they gave him 30 blows with a cudgel. The next day he did his exercise a little less badly, and he received but 20 blows. The day following they gave him only 10, and he was regarded by his comrades as a prodigy. Candide, all stupefied, could not yet very well realize how he was a hero. He resolved one fine day in spring to go for a walk, marching straight before him, believing that it was a privilege of the human as well as of the animal species to make use of their legs as they pleased. He had advanced 2 leagues when he was overtaken by 4 others, heroes of 6 feet, who bound him and carried him to a dungeon. He was asked which he would like the best, to be whipped 36 times through all the regiment, or to receive at once 12 balls of lead in his brain. He vainly said that human will is free, and that he chose neither the one nor the other. He was forced to make a choice. He determined, in virtue of that gift of God called liberty, to run the gauntlet 36 times. He bore this twice. The regiment was composed of 2,000 men, that composed for him 4,000 strokes, which laid bare all his muscles and nerves, from the nape of his neck quite down to his rump. As they were going to proceed to a third whipping, Candide, able to bear no more, begged as a favor that they would be so good as to shoot him. He obtained this favor. They bandaged his eyes, and bade him kneel down. The King of the Bulgarians passed at this moment and ascertained the nature of the crime. As he had great talent, he understood from all that he learned of Candide that he was a young metaphysician, extremely ignorant of the things of this world, and he accorded him his pardon with a clemency which will bring him praise in all the journals, and throughout all ages. An able surgeon cured Candide in 3 weeks by means of emollients taught by Dioscorides. He had already a little skin, and was able to march when the King of the Bulgarians gave battle to the King of the Iberians. 3. How Candide made his escape from the Bulgarians, and what afterwards became of him. There was never anything so gallant, so spruce, so brilliant, and so well disposed as the two armies. Trumpets, fifes, hautboys, drums, and cannon made music such as hell itself had never heard. The cannons first of all laid flat about 6,000 men on each side. The muskets swept away from this best of worlds 9 or 10,000 ruffians who infested its surface. The bayonet was also a sufficient reason for the death of several thousands. The whole might amount to 30,000 souls. Candide, who trembled like a philosopher, hid himself as well as he could during this heroic butchery. At length, while the 2 kings were causing Te Deum to be sung each in his own camp, Candide resolved to go and reason elsewhere on effects and causes. He passed over heaps of dead and dying, and first reached a neighboring village. It was in cinders. It was an Abari village which the Bulgarians had burned according to the laws of war. Here, old men covered with wounds, beheld their wives, hugging their children to their bloody breasts, massacred before their faces. There, their daughters, disemboweled and breathing their last after having satisfied the natural wants of Bulgarian heroes, while others, half burned in the flames, begged to be dispatched. The earth was strewed with brains, arms, and legs. Candide fled quickly to another village. It belonged to the Bulgarians, and the Iberian heroes had treated it in the same way. Candide, walking always over palpitating limbs or across ruins, arrived at last beyond the seat of war, with a few provisions in his knapsack, and Miss Cunegonde always in his heart. His provisions failed him when he arrived in Holland, but having heard that everybody was rich in that country, and that they were Christians, he did not doubt but he should meet with the same treatment from them as he had met with in the Baron's castle, before Miss Cunegonde's bright eyes were the cause of his expulsion thence. He asked alms of several grave-looking people, who all answered him, that if he continued to follow this trade they would confine him to the house of correction, where he should be taught to get a living. The next he addressed was a man who had been haranguing a large assembly for a whole hour on the subject of charity. But the orator, looking askew, said, "What are you doing here? Are you for the good cause?" "There can be no effect without a cause," modestly answered Candide. "The whole is necessarily concatenated and arranged for the best. It was necessary for me to have been banished from the presence of Miss Cunegonde, to have afterwards run the gauntlet, and now it is necessary I should beg my bread until I learn to earn it. All this cannot be otherwise." "My friend," said the orator to him, "do you believe the Pope to be Antichrist?"
"I have not heard it," answered Candide, "but whether he be, or whether he be not, I want bread."
"Thou dost not deserve to eat," said the other. "Begone, rogue, begone, wretch, do not come near me again." The orator's wife, putting her head out of the window, and spying a man that doubted whether the Pope was Antichrist, poured over him a full. Oh, heavens! To what excess does religious zeal carry the ladies? A man who had never been christened, a good Anabaptist, named James, beheld the cruel and ignominious treatment shown to one of his brethren, an unfeathered biped with a rational soul. He took him home, cleaned him, gave him bread and beer, presented him with 2 florins, and even wished to teach him the manufacture of Persian stuffs which they make in Holland. Candide, almost prostrating himself before him, cried, "Master Pangloss has well said that all is for the best in this world, for I am infinitely more touched by your extreme generosity than with the inhumanity of that gentleman in the black coat and his lady." The next day, as he took a walk, he met a beggar all covered with scabs, his eyes diseased, the end of his nose eaten away, his mouth distorted, his teeth black, choking in his throat, tormented with a violent cough, and spitting out a tooth at each effort. 4. How Candide found his old master Pangloss, and what happened to them. Candide, yet more moved with compassion than with horror, gave to this shocking beggar the 2 florins which he had received from the honest Anabaptist James. The spectre looked at him very earnestly, dropped a few tears, and fell upon his neck. Candide recoiled in disgust. "Alas," said one wretch to the other, "do you no longer know your dear Pangloss? What do I hear? You, my dear master. You in this terrible plight. What misfortune has happened to you? Why are you no longer in the most magnificent of castles? What has become of Miss Cunegonde, the pearl of girls, and nature's masterpiece?" "I am so weak that I cannot stand," said Pangloss. Upon which Candide carried him to the Anabaptist's stable, and gave him a crust of bread. As soon as Pangloss had refreshed himself a little, "Well," said Candide, "Cunegonde?"
"She is dead," replied the other.
Candide fainted at this word. His friend recalled his senses with a little bad vinegar which he found by chance in the stable. Candide reopened his eyes. "Cunegonde is dead. Ah, best of worlds, where art thou? But of what illness did she die? Was it not for grief, upon seeing her father kick me out of his magnificent castle?"
"No," said Pangloss, "she was ripped open by the Bulgarian soldiers. After having been violated by many, they broke the baron's head for attempting to defend her. My lady, her mother, was cut in pieces. My poor pupil was served just in the same manner as his sister, and as for the castle, they have not left one stone upon another, not a barn, nor a sheep, nor a duck, nor a tree, but we have had our revenge, for the Iberes have done the very same thing to a neighboring barony, which belonged to a Bulgarian lord." At this discourse Candide fainted again, but coming to himself, and having said all that it became him to say, inquired into the cause and effect, as well as into the sufficient reason that had reduced Pangloss to so miserable a plight. "Alas," said the other, "it was love, love, the comfort of the human species, the preserver of the universe, the soul of all sensible beings, love, tender love." "Alas," said Candide, "I know this love, that sovereign of hearts, that soul of our souls, yet it never cost me more than a kiss and 20 kicks on the backside. How could this beautiful cause produce in you an effect so abominable?" Pangloss made answer in these terms, "Oh, my dear Candide, you remember Paquette, that pretty wench who waited on our noble baroness. In her arms I tasted the delights of paradise, which produced in me those hell torments with which you see me devoured. She was infected with them, she is perhaps dead of them. This present Paquette received of a learned Grey Friar, who had traced it to its source, he had had it of an old countess, who had received it from a cavalry captain, who owed it to a marchioness, who took it from a page, who had received it from a Jesuit, who when a novice had it in a direct line from one of the companions of Christopher Columbus. For my part I shall give it to nobody, I am dying.
Oh, Pangloss! Cried Candide, what a strange genealogy! Is not the devil the original stock of it?
Not at all, replied this great man, it was a thing unavoidable, a necessary ingredient in the best of worlds, for if Columbus had not in an island of America caught this disease, which contaminates the source of life, frequently even hinders generation, and which is evidently opposed to the great end of nature, we should have neither chocolate nor cochineal. We are also to observe that upon our continent, this distemper is like religious controversy, confined to a particular spot. The Turks, the Indians, the Persians, the Chinese, the Siamese, the Japanese, know nothing of it, but there is a sufficient reason for believing that they will know it in their turn in a few centuries. In the meantime, it has made marvelous progress among us, especially in those great armies composed of honest, well-disciplined hirelings, who decide the destiny of states, for we may safely affirm that when an army of 30,000 men fights another of an equal number, there are about 20,000 of them PXD on each side.
Well, this is wonderful, said Candide, but you must get cured.
Alas! How can I? Said Pangloss, I have not a farthing, my friend, and all over the globe there is no letting of blood or taking a glister, without paying, or somebody paying for you. These last words determined Candide. He went and flung himself at the feet of the charitable Anabaptist James, and gave him so touching a picture of the state to which his friend was reduced, that the good man did not scruple to take Dr. Pangloss into his house, and had him cured at his expense. In the cure Pangloss lost only an eye and an ear. He wrote well, and knew arithmetic perfectly. The Anabaptist James made him his bookkeeper. At the end of 2 months, being obliged to go to Lisbon about some mercantile affairs, he took the two philosophers with him in his ship. Pangloss explained to him how everything was so constituted that it could not be better. James was not of this opinion. It is more likely, said he, mankind have a little corrupted nature, for they were not born wolves, and they have become wolves. God has given them neither cannon of 24-pounders, nor bayonets, and yet they have made cannon and bayonets to destroy one another. Into this account I might throw not only bankrupts, but justice which seizes on the effects of bankrupts to cheat the creditors. All this was indispensable, replied the one-eyed doctor, for private misfortunes make the general good, so that the more private misfortunes there are the greater is the general good. While he reasoned, the sky darkened, the winds blew from the four quarters, and the ship was assailed by a most terrible tempest within sight of the port of Lisbon. V. Tempest, shipwreck, earthquake, and what became of Dr. Pangloss, Candide, and James the Anabaptist. Half dead of that inconceivable anguish which the rolling of a ship produces, one half of the passengers were not even sensible of the danger. The other half shrieked and prayed. The sheets were rent, the masts broken, the vessel gaped. Work who would, no one heard, no one commanded. The Anabaptist being upon deck bore hand, when a brutish sailor struck him roughly and laid him sprawling, but with the violence of the blow he himself tumbled head foremost overboard, and stuck upon a piece of the broken mast. Honest James ran to his assistance, hauled him up, and from the effort he made was precipitated into the sea in sight of the sailor, who left him to perish, without deigning to look at him. Candide drew near and saw his benefactor, who rose above the water one moment and was then swallowed up forever. He was just going to jump after him, but was prevented by the philosopher Pangloss, who demonstrated to him that the Bay of Lisbon had been made on purpose for the Anabaptist to be drowned. While he was proving this a priori, the ship foundered, all perished except Pangloss, Candide, and that brutal sailor who had drowned the good Anabaptist. The villain swam safely to the shore, while Pangloss and Candide were borne thither upon a plank. As soon as they recovered themselves a little they walked toward Lisbon. They had some money left, with which they hoped to save themselves from starving, after they had escaped drowning. Scarcely had they reached the city, lamenting the death of their benefactor, when they felt the earth tremble under their feet. The sea swelled and foamed in the harbor, and beat to pieces the vessels riding at anchor. Whirlwinds of fire and ashes covered the streets and public places, houses fell, roofs were flung upon the pavements, and the pavements were scattered. 30,000 inhabitants of all ages and sexes were crushed under the ruins. The sailor, whistling and swearing, said there was booty to be gained here. What can be the sufficient reason of this phenomenon? Said Pangloss. This is the last day! Cried Candide. The sailor ran among the ruins, facing death to find money. Finding it, he took it, got drunk, and having slept himself sober, purchased the favors of the first good-natured wench whom he met on the ruins of the destroyed houses, and in the midst of the dying and the dead. Pangloss pulled him by the sleeve. My friend, said he, This is not right. You sin against the universal reason, you choose your time badly.
Split in fury, answered the other, I am a sailor and born at Batavia. 4 times have I trampled upon the crucifix in 4 voyages to Japan. 5, a fig for thy universal reason.
Some falling stones had wounded Candide. He lay stretched in the street covered with rubbish.
Alas, said he to Pangloss, get me a little wine and oil, I am dying.
This concussion of the earth is no new thing, answered Pangloss. The city of Lima, in America, experienced the same convulsions last year, the same cause, the same effects. There is certainly a train of sulfur underground from Lima to Lisbon.
Nothing more probable, said Candide, but for the love of God a little oil and wine.
How probable? Replied the philosopher. I maintain that the point is capable of being demonstrated.
Candide fainted away, and Pangloss fetched him some water from a neighboring fountain. The following day they rummaged among the ruins and found provisions, with which they repaired their exhausted strength. After this they joined with others in relieving those inhabitants who had escaped death. Some, whom they had succored, gave them as good a dinner as they could in such disastrous circumstances. True, the repast was mournful, and the company moistened their bread with tears, but Pangloss consoled them, assuring them that things could not be otherwise.
For, said he, all that is for the best. If there is a volcano at Lisbon it cannot be elsewhere. It is impossible that things should be other than they are, for everything is right.
A little man dressed in black, familiar of the Inquisition, who sat by him, politely took up his word and said,
apparently, then, sir, you do not believe in original sin, for if all is for the best there has then been neither fall nor punishment.
I humbly ask your excellency's pardon, answered Pangloss, still more politely, for the fall and curse of man necessarily entered into the system of the best of worlds.
Sir, said the familiar, you do not then believe in liberty?
Your excellency will excuse me, said Pangloss, liberty is consistent with absolute necessity, for it was necessary we should be free, for, in short, the determinate will.
Pangloss was in the middle of his sentence, when the familiar beckoned to his footman, who gave him a glass of wine from Porto or Oporto.
Fie. How the Portuguese made a beautiful auto da fe, to prevent any further earthquakes, and how Candide was publicly whipped.
After the earthquake had destroyed 3/4 of Lisbon, the sages of that country could think of no means more effectual to prevent utter ruin than to give the people a beautiful auto da fe. 6, for it had been decided by the University of Coimbra, that the burning of a few people alive by a slow fire, and with great ceremony, is an infallible secret to hinder the earth from quaking. In consequence hereof, they had seized on a Biscayner, convicted of having married his godmother, and on 2 Portuguese, for rejecting the bacon which larded a chicken they were eating. After dinner, they came and secured Dr. Pangloss, and his disciple Candide, the one for speaking his mind, the other for having listened with an air of approbation. They were conducted to separate apartments, extremely cold, as they were never incommoded by the sun. 8 days after they were dressed in sanbenitos and their heads ornamented with paper mitres. The mitre and sanbenito belonging to Candide were painted with reversed flames and with devils that had neither tails nor claws, but Pangloss's devils had claws and tails and the flames were upright. They marched in procession thus habited and heard a very pathetic sermon, followed by fine church music. Candide was whipped in cadence while they were singing, the Biscayner, and the 2 men who had refused to eat bacon, were burned, and Pangloss was hanged, though that was not the custom. The same day the earth sustained a most violent concussion.
Candide, terrified, amazed, desperate, all bloody, all palpitating, said to himself,
if this is the best of possible worlds, what then are the others? Well, if I had been only whipped I could put up with it, for I experienced that among the Bulgarians, but oh, my dear Pangloss, thou greatest of philosophers, that I should have seen you hanged, without knowing for what. Oh, my dear Anabaptist, thou best of men, that thou shouldst have been drowned in the very harbor. Oh Mississippi Cunegonde, thou pearl of girls, that thou shouldst have had thy belly ripped open.
Thus he was musing, scarce able to stand, preached at, whipped, absolved, and blessed, when an old woman accosted him saying,
my son, take courage and follow me.
7. How the old woman took care of Candide, and how he found the object he loved.
Candide did not take courage, but followed the old woman to a decayed house, where she gave him a pot of pomatum to anoint his sores, showed him a very neat little bed, with a suit of clothes hanging up, and left him something to eat and drink.
Eat, drink, sleep, said she, and may Our Lady of Atocha, 9, the great Saint Anthony of Padua,
and the great Saint James of Compostela, receive you under their protection. I shall be back tomorrow. Candide, amazed at all he had suffered and still more with the charity of the old woman, wished to kiss her hand. It is not my hand you must kiss, said the old woman, I shall be back tomorrow. Anoint yourself with the pomatum, eat and sleep. Candide, notwithstanding so many disasters, ate and slept. The next morning the old woman brought him his breakfast, looked at his back, and rubbed it herself with another ointment. In like manner she brought him his dinner, and at night she returned with his supper. The day following she went through the very same ceremonies. Who are you? Said Candide, who has inspired you with so much good.